Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, Florida is a water wonderland. Sounds like one of those Chamber of Commerce statements, but it's actually true. I don't know how many miles of coastline. I'm going to guess in the neighborhood of 1,000 miles of coastline around the state. And then, you know, gosh, if you've flown low over central Florida in particular, most of Florida really, but particularly the main central part of the state, looks like Swiss cheese. It's just honeycombed with lakes, large and small, and lots of rivers. But really, one thing that people aren't that much aware of is that Florida is a water wonderland under the surface, too. There is so much water under the surface. The whole state used to be under the ocean, right? Which is why it's sticking down here like a peninsula, and there's so much sand. And there are aquifers, and there are caves, and there are entry points into the aquifer under the state that are sinkholes and underwater caves, and there are people who explore those things. My guest today is such a person, the latest in the long line of adventurers and explorers we've had on American Variety. His name is Wes Skiles. Welcome, Wes.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, you know, gosh, we've had shows on Everglades water restoration and the natural history of the St. John's River and the drought conditions in Lake Okeechobee and lots of things. We did one time a year or so back have a couple of guys on who had explored Wakaiva Springs, which is a big spring system over on the west coast of the state near Tampa, I guess. And they had found a room, as I recall, the size of like the Superdome under there that they found. So Wes Skiles is a filmmaker in addition to being a cave diver, an underwater cave explorer. He's a producer and owns his company called Karst Productions that makes documentary films about the underwater world in these caves. And he's really extremely prolific. And we'll get into later talking about the huge number of films that you've made. But Wes, I'd like to ask you to just start off maybe by giving an overview of the range of subjects of documentary films you've done and where they've aired and that kind of thing. We'll get back to talking about a lot of them more specifically.
Well, my world is that of an explorer, and I started entering into these amazing subterranean water-filled labyrinths when I was a young man, and the first thing that I was motivated to do was to try to start capturing images of it, and I wanted to share those images and look at them as an explorer and just enjoy that world. And it was not long until people started calling, saying, can you film this for us? Believe it or not, my first client was National Geographic. It was a wonderful way to start a career of filmmaking.
Boy, I'll say.
And we then went into the world of telling stories of things that happened to people, ones that got lost and trapped and unfortunately drowned. And, you know, the world of filmmaking became a career path for me as I continued to explore caves.
So you started off as a still photographer, or did you start right off filming underwater?
I've always been both. I love still photography. And my brother and I made surf films when I was young. And so I was into motion pictures as well. And I've continued to balance the two, believing that still photography is the most challenging to capture a single moment perfectly. And my principal client is National Geographic magazine. And in the television world, it's a different beast. It's about, you know, telling that journey of what it's like to be there, the vicarious, visceral experience of traveling through these wondrous underworlds.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with underwater filmmaker Wes Skiles, who owns Karst Productions and produces lots of films for, I guess, primarily National Geographic, and I saw one on TV not long ago on, I guess it was on Nova, as part of your series on Water's Journey, I think it was. So maybe, Wes, tell us about that whole series of Water's Journey in Florida filmmaking.
Well, one of the big challenges that we have here in the state of Florida is getting people to understand and respect and value water. And 90% of Florida's drinking water, our potable water supply, comes from the Floridan aquifer, this invisible world beneath our feet.
Yeah.
And I came up with this idea that what we needed to do was to bring that world to the surface somehow or another, to make the connection so that people could relate to that world and begin to respect it and therefore take better care of it, to conserve it and to do the right things by this precious water. So I came up with the idea of this journey to follow the path of water through the state of Florida. And we came up with quite an ingenious device, a communication device that would allow us to track a team as they traveled through the underground rivers, if I might say, that travel beneath Florida, and it communicates a signal to a team above ground. And this would graphically illustrate where these enormous water supplies were and how they were traveling. And as we made the film, we would travel underneath of restaurants and bowling alleys and and hotels and highways. And it was just remarkable that the underground aquifer and the caves within them knows no bounds. They go wherever they please to go. And above that is every aspect of society, all the buildings and roads and activities that we do. And the goal of the show was to show that connection, which we quite graphically achieved.
How deep down are you when you say you're traveling under shopping malls and suburbs and what have you? I mean,
sometimes we're traveling surprisingly shallow, perhaps 30 to 50 feet beneath the land surface.
Wow.
Other times, much deeper. The Floridan aquifer is a three-dimensional landform that was influenced by past sea level stands over time, and the caves tend to form right at or just below the water table of that period. And now, of course, the water table is where it's at, and beneath us are these very specific zones of caves.
Is there a flow in these underwater rivers? I mean, are you kind of cast along in a current, or how does that work?
Oh, absolutely. These are very dynamic rivers underground, and not all of Florida is these underground rivers as we describe them. Florida's karst hydrogeology is very complex, and much of it works through what we call intergranular porosity, which is just basically water moving through smaller pores. And then you have also these caverns and caves. But the important thing to understand is that all of it is vulnerable, and all of it transmits whatever things we do on the surface, whatever stormwater runoff and fuel spills and activities that impact water. Those materials make their way down into the substrate and into this limestone-bearing rock. And ultimately, it's all moving. It's all very dynamic. There are, like mountains, there are hills underground, underwater. And there's high points and low points. And water always travels downhill, even when it's inside the earth.
Oh, really?
And so we're always dealing with some kind of flow or current when we're in these caves.
So what kind of signal did you say earlier? You said you transmit a signal from the diver down there up to the surface. Is it a TV signal or just a location signal, or what is it?
Well, it's been evolving. We started out with a very interesting fellow, Brian Pease, who is an engineer and was with the U.S. Navy and in a top secret program in which he dealt with communications, sonar, and underwater low frequency communications. And he built us a device called an extreme low frequency transmitter. And it is a frequency capable of transmitting a signal through water and rock. And now we have evolved it to also carry a voice transmission, so we can physically talk as well, which is quite interesting.
Well, that's good. So you said that your kind of ingenious device here or concept was to track the flow of Florida's water along through the state. So I guess that, does that correspond to the sequence of films that you've produced in the Water's Journey series?
Well, what we did is we did a total of four films, and we wanted to explain to the people of the state of Florida and really all over the United States, because these are themes that repeat themselves throughout the U.S. and the world. Water's Journey is a story of how water moves through different types of ecosystems. The first episode was about aquifers and groundwater. That was called The Hidden Rivers of Florida. And the second episode was The River Returns, and that was a story about the Great St. John's River and about stormwater and the impacts that development and runoff have on our river systems. And we also explored the role of tributaries and creeks and watersheds, and how no matter where you live, no matter how far away you think you are from some major river that you're familiar with, that you're within that watershed and you're part of it. And water is flowing through your yard, whether you know it or not, and traveling to a nearby creek that travels to a larger tributary that travels to a stream that travels to a river. And we wanted to show that connectivity. And then the third and fourth episodes took on the story of the Everglades and the great grass wetland system. And we looked at estuaries and the marine coral reef ecosystems as well.
So that's the Water's Journey series. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with documentary filmmaker Wes Skiles about all of the filmmaking he's done that goes on TV, films that are geared around looking at different aspects of the great underwater world of water that we don't see under Florida. And I guess what you're saying really is that it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. You don't see these aquifers, but there's this huge river system under our feet practically, and really pretty shallow at some points, like you were saying, with the interconnectedness of the water under there and the water up above, which as we know is often polluted. Wes, what's the condition of the water down below? Is it crystal clear, or is it chemically polluted at a microscopic parts per billion level, but it looks clean, or what's it like now?
Yeah, it's very perceptive of you. It is incredibly clear water, but clear water does not denote pure water. There are many, many things that are invisible that dissolve into this water so that we can't see it, but indeed it's there. And the state of Florida's drinking water right now remains pretty good overall, but there are certainly alarming changes occurring. And the biggest one, and it really is a precursor to other contaminants, we call it the indicator, is nitrates. Nitrates come principally in two forms, an inorganic, which is fertilizers, and then organic, which is human and livestock waste. And these contaminants, these nitrogen fixers, get into our water very, very easily. There's no magic filter that removes nitrate. it travels freely down through our porous medium of sand and limestone that we have here in North Florida, especially. And it gets down into our drinking water and then out into the springs, where basically is the end of the pipe. And once that water comes out of the caves, there's a sudden and dramatic bloom of algae. And this algae continues down local rivers, causing algae blooms, completely changing our flora and fauna that used to be part of Florida and replacing it with a much less desirable type of life. And ultimately travels out to the oceans and has great impacts there, including the red tides that we experience. So this all begins when we are innocently fertilizing our yard, trying to make a pretty green yard, or we're growing our food for feeding the world, which is certainly a justifiable and important thing that we do here in Florida, but it has its impact nonetheless.
Well, all our human activities have an impact, and it's sad to hear that even down below the surface in the vast resource of what should be pure water there, that it's already polluted and we're affecting everything below us. Well, let's turn to the operational aspects of making your films. I guess your primary client is National Geographic, but I know you've had films on PBS and many films on the Discovery Channel and on A&E, and you've did a Sony feature film on this topic and an IMAX film. So you've done, I guess, dozens, if not a couple hundred films. You're extremely prolific, as I said at the outset. And I think, Wes, that you wear a lot of hats. You're not obviously just a diver, or just a diver and a photographer, but you're the producer and the filmmaker. How do you dive and direct and film at the same time?
That is an excellent question. I guess that's why you have a radio show. It's experience. Mm. And there's no way that I could do the things I am fortunate enough to do without having gained a great deal of experience. And unfortunately, having dealt with a tremendous amount of tragedy in my life, I have lost 28 close personal friends to this very dangerous sport.
Good grief.
And it certainly had an impact on me. Fortunately, none of those deaths have ever occurred on a dive that I was on. Hmm. And I'm fortunate in that respect. But the sport requires that you pay 100% attention to where you're at and the amount of gas you have and where your buddies are and the condition of the cave environment. And I would say 95% or more of the people that do the sport of cave diving really should do nothing but stay alive and cave dive. But because I've done thousands of dives, I have reached a point where the cave diving part is subconscious in me. It's running through me all the time. I'm physically thinking about staying alive and what my gas is, but I've also developed the ability to allocate a certain amount of thinking time to doing these other activities. And it's a challenge. I wouldn't tell you it's not. It takes quite a focus to remain weightless and not drop to the floor and silt out the cave while you are contemplating how to operate the most complex underwater camera systems on Earth.
Incredible.
Or how to communicate successfully to a team of divers, some carrying lights that will illuminate the cave, others on camera performing actions that tell the story of what we're doing. And the whole thing is quite the challenge. A lot of people don't understand at the end of the dive when we come up and everybody's like, hey, let's go out and get some dinner and have a great time this evening. Why I'm like, that's okay, you guys, you know,
you're drained.
Go ahead and have a nice time. I'm going to rest and start thinking about what responsibilities I have tomorrow.
Well, I was thinking earlier that it maybe sounds analogous to skydiving, but it really sounds like it's much more complex and much more dangerous. It sounds really like it's more closely analogous to extravehicular activity out of a spacecraft than anything else.
It is. I would have to say that it is the spacesuit outside of the space station type of work. And, you know, they're tasked with great difficulties, and they have accidents. I don't know if you've ever heard about some of the things like losing toolkits.
Sure.
and very close near misses where they become detached.
Right, almost drift away. Yeah.
Yeah, almost drift away, and the difficulties that, you know, your brain is really overloaded when you're doing this. And we are dealing with a sport that things can go dramatically wrong really quickly. It's kind of like an avalanche. It's like this little thing happens, and unless you have this deep sense, it's really like a sixth sense that can lead to this, which will lead to that, which will lead to the death of all of us. Stop. We're calling the dive, and everybody's looking at me going, what's going on? Everything's fine. No, we're going up, you know, and listening to those, you know, intuitive feelings that you get, or understanding the implications of these cataclysmic series of events that can occur.
Yeah.
And just knowing, and I believe truly that's why we've stayed alive.
Well, it sounds to me like I'm going to sound a little bit highfalutin here, but it almost sounds like you've evolved into a new kind of underwater creature, because your instincts are so attuned to the dangers around you, and the technical aspects of it have become so second nature to you that you almost don't have to devote much of your brain to it, and you can instead focus on your job, which is filming. But you're in a situation where at a moment's notice, you and everybody around you can die, and there's no margin of safety. There's no easy backup plan, you know. You're just, if something goes wrong, it can cascade very rapidly into a totally fatal situation, and the next set of divers a year from now might find you floating around in there.
Exactly. I laugh at a kind of sadly at my job security, in that
there's only one of you.
I get the calls, and I get people who call me and they go, we tried calling everybody else, and everybody we talked to said you gotta call this guy, and we really didn't want to call you because we knew you were going to be expensive.
When you're the only one, you are expensive.
yeah. Well, it's something that if you want, you can either pay for, you know, weeks of nothing, or you can pay the price that it really costs to do it and get what you're looking for in a rather short amount of time. But my real goal is, I tell my team, somebody knock me off my perch. You know, I can't do this forever. I carry these huge cameras, and it's so physical. People have no idea how, you know, everybody else is cave diving, you know, and cave diving is a technical, very equipment intense sport. And then on top of that, I'm carrying a very large camera. And usually it's got a number of attachments to it, including lights. And I dive in a very awkward position where my neck is tilted back and my arms are out. And it is physically very, very taxing. I come up from a dive and it hurts, you know. I'm like, somebody, you know, somebody come take over, do this and
carry me out of here.
And I'll get us the jobs and I'll executive produce and no one will do it.
Please, I'd love to have some competition. Incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Wes, I wish, as I always do, that we had another half hour on the show. And in fact, after we end the show, I'm going to get you to schedule to come back on. Because what I'd really like to talk with you about is the operational aspects, the logistical parts of it, how you physically get into the caves, how you stage the placement of tanks and that kind of thing. Because your life is hanging by the details of how all that's done, and I'm sure it's interesting to do. But let me ask you this instead. In the minute or so that we have left, describe one peak experience, like either a high where something was so ecstatic an experience or a near-death experience, one peak experience in your cave diving.
We'll go with a high. I was one of the first explorers allowed into the grandfather of all springs, Wakulla Springs. And I invented a device called the X-Sled that would allow us to carry a large volume of gas on a big scooter called an Aquazep. And we would literally fly through the subterranean underworld through these tunnels. And as we were traveling through these giant passages, we dipped down through a deep section, and then we started up a hill, and we came into a room of undescribable proportions, an air clear room, and in it, at the very top of a huge rock pile, was this perfectly square cube rock, as out of 2001 Space Odyssey, that I instantly knew the room's name would be the Monolith Room. And this thing was the size of a football chamber.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of the most remarkable moments of my life to be the first human being to discover such an incredible space inside our Earth.
Wes Giles, it sounds like you've been a lot of places first and the only human to go there, and you've got an incredible, unique career, and you probably are unique. People who are interested in looking at a little more at what Wes and his company do can go to www.karstproductions.com. That's K-A-R-S-T productions.com. You can also go to the Florida Department of Environmental Protection has a site, www.floridasprings.org, floridasprings.org. And there's a big sidebar there, a big splashy link to Water's Journey, Florida Springs Web Expedition, which is more of Wes's work. Wes Giles, thank you so much for being on and talking with us about your fascinating career and experiences as an underwater cave diver and filmmaker. And we'll have you on again to talk more about this fascinating subject. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.